you know, we're just going to let God take care of it. We'll do nothing. It was very, you know, active faith. We're going to do what we can. I think this is strikes a good balance. Sometimes that's a struggle. You know, when should we be patient and let God just take control and kind of act? And when should we step up and do something, be active? And I feel like they've struck a very delicate and difficult to reach sometimes balance between those two on this occasion. We clearly see them being active in saving Moses, but obviously they, as well as everyone else, could see it wasn't ultimately because of their efforts, but God's, that Moses' life was preserved. Thoughts and comments to the first 10 verses or so of chapter 2? All right, so let's read. If somebody would read 11 through the rest of, really 11 through 22.
Said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water, and they filled the troughs to water their father's flock. Then the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. When they came to Reuel, their father, he said, "How is it that you have come so soon today?" And they said, "An Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and he also drew enough water for us and watered the flock." So he said to his daughters, "And where is he? And why is it you have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread." Then Moses was content to live with the man, and he gave Zipporah, his daughter, to Moses. And she bore him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a foreign land."
Okay, so Moses grows up. We see him as an infant. Now all of a sudden he's grown up. How old is Moses in verse 11? You won't find it in verse 11. And how do we know he's 40, Austin? Yeah, Acts 7. So Stephen indicates that he's 40. It's interesting the things we learn sometimes in the New Testament about things that happened in the Old Testament. But Moses is 40, so he's certainly an adult male by this point. And he is obviously aware of who he is, right? He obviously is aware that he is not an Egyptian, even though he was raised as Pharaoh's grandson. He is an Israelite. He is of the Hebrews. And he sees something happen that he finds to be unjust. What did he see occurring?
An Egyptian killed one of
the Hebrews. Right. Yeah, he sees this injustice. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren, there at the end of verse 11. And so Moses takes action, right? He takes matters into his own hands. There's no court order. There's no trial that happens here. Moses sees an injustice. He decides to do something about it. He looks to his left. He looks to his right. Doesn't see anybody. And so he does what? Yeah, he strikes the Egyptian and kills the Egyptian. Well, that's probably, I don't know if he meant to kill him or not, but that's kind of creates an inconvenience. At least the body does. And so he buries the Egyptian there in the sand, probably thinking, well, you know, that was taken care of, right? Buried in the sand, don't have to think about that again. Let's just kind of move on. You know, perhaps thinking he was a hero of the Hebrews. I don't know why they wouldn't have celebrated him as such. But this is what Moses does. Now a day goes by, and he sees something occurring again. The next day, it says in verse 13, this time it was 2 Hebrews who were fighting. And again, Moses attempts to intervene. I think he sees himself as someone who's in a position to help his people. And they don't take kindly to Moses trying to intervene. And what do they reveal that they know about Moses?
That
Austin?
I assume it's not they. I assume it's the one who's being the aggressor.
Fair enough. Yeah, probably true.
He says, hey, you killed this other guy. You're going to kill me too.
Right. Yeah. Reveals that, oh no. You know, not only are you aware, but you're using this against me, right? And so it would seem that whoever had the upper hand in that fight was the one who wasn't happy about Moses becoming the arbitrator between these two, and reveals that he's aware of what happened. Well, that is all that Moses can take, right? He can't bear the fact that these folks know that, and so he is afraid. It says in verse 14, surely the matter has become known. And so, yeah.
I've got a question. When I look at this, sometimes I wonder if Moses really did understand the fact that I know he was raised, his mother raised him, and I don't know, you know, when I think about telling a child that, well, you were really born and I'm your, that could be not such a great thing because, you know, our children might go reveal it back to them. And especially later on when God's talking to Moses and he brings up the point in there, Moses asked God, he said, or he goes to the people and he says, tell them that your God, and Moses said, he says, and your God, doesn't refer to him as his God. And it makes me wonder sometimes, I'm looking at that, the questionability of that, about him, whether he really understood at this particular period of time that he really, really was, well, I guess he probably knew the Hebrew, but I don't know how much of that he knew, and I don't understand. When I look at this and read this, I don't know all those guys. I don't think they knew, because why wouldn't they say, well, you're one of us, and who are you to, you know? But and so I'm just wondering about that. Now, I just, other thoughts. Maybe somebody has something else.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know that we don't have a lot of knowledge about this, right? We know how old he was from Acts, but we don't know much about his upbringing from the time his mother nurses him until age 40. I don't know how long Moses' parents, mother or father, had an influence on him. I don't know if that was a very short period of time. You know, it was 15 months. Is it 2 years? Is it six? Was it longer? I don't know how much involvement Moses or Pharaoh's daughter allowed his parents to have. But somewhere along the line, it seems pretty clear he understands, you know, who he is, who his descendants are, who his actual parents are. It kind of comes into his own. Did he know that all along, but just failed to act on it until he was 40? I'm not sure. Or was this something he suddenly discovered at this age?
Yeah, well, one of the things, the other thing about later on, God tells him, I think it's in 3:6, I'm not sure about that, but he tells him, he said, you are, it tells him about his father. You are your fathers, mm-hmm. who are Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He mentions that. Mm-hmm. So if he didn't understand it prior to that, and I wonder when I look at this, Moses understands a lot of stuff, the time he's writing all this stuff. You know, we're looking back on history as he writes
right.
this. And
right.
So just a thought. I wonder about some of it.
Yeah, Jared?
The way I took it was that he understood who he was, but the way I was reading is that he made kind of his first appearance, right? In verse 11 says, in those days, he went after his brethren. And then verse 13, on the second day, when he went out the second day, it appears this is his first appearance
right.
that he's making before his brethren, his Israelite brethren. So it seems they don't know who he is.
Right.
So he's got,
right.
He knows his identity. But here's this first on the scene who comes up and kills a person in a fight, and they don't know, you know, whose side he's on.
Right.
And so, you know, next time he makes an appearance, okay, who's he going to kill next?
Well, and we later learn when he flees to Midian, in verse 19, they said, an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds. So I think they're seeing Moses as an Egyptian. You know, 40 years is a long time. It's hard for a zebra to change his stripes. And so if he was raised as an Egyptian, surely he would have looked the part. And so it is interesting. You just wonder, and we don't know, but you wonder if Moses, you know, recently became aware. Maybe shortly before 40, he became aware of who he was, and that may have been what spurred him to action on this point, or at this point. And so that's a good point, Jared, that he, you know, first and second days out, pretty rocky beginning for Moses. What do you think about Moses' actions here? Do you feel like they're justified? Are they unjust? Did he do the right thing, the wrong thing?
He did the right thing.
Okay.
I think. I,
Sure, yeah, 7:23, 24, 25.
Yeah, it came into his heart. He did want to. It appeared to him that God had put him in this place and in this position at this time to deliver his oppressed people. And that's what he was trying to do. He wasn't looking for glory. He gave up his throne, if you will. I mean, he's the grandson of Pharaoh. And
sure.
So all the gold, all the riches, he counted that for nothing, but he wanted to deliver his people. And
sure.
Just like Jesus coming into the world wanting to save his people, and they rejected him very quickly, that's what Moses is feeling. He thinks he's doing the right thing at the right time in the right way, and for all intents and purposes, he's justified, I think, with God, but God still needs to refine him more and teach him how to shepherd his people.
Right. Derek?
We know of other figures in the Bible who understood that God had a plan for them, and without seeking God's wisdom, his advice, they go ahead and take care of it the way that they see fit. Obviously, we don't know here if he, you know, prayed to God, asked for God's wisdom, what, you know, he found out he had some role in saving the people. You know, God, how am I to fill that role instead of just going out and starting? You know, it's going to take a while, one at a time, for him to
right.
physically, you know, release the people from the Egyptians.
An army of one, yeah.
Right, so, you know, we don't know, but you see the wisdom, you know, when in seeking God's advice or direction, that if we know that there's a place for us, we need to go to God instead of, you know, trying our own direction.
Right, yeah, fair point. Tim?
Yeah, he did. His actions were questionable, or they'd be frowned upon because he looked one way and then he looked the other, and then he hid the Egyptian.
Right, right. So I think what you see, what I see here in Moses at least, is good motives, right? He has good intentions. I think those are pure intentions. I think those are right motives and heart. I think that's much of what Stephen gets to in his sermon in Acts 7. I think that his what we fail to see is him consulting the Lord and maybe doing it the Lord's way. This is maybe, again, a sense or an example of God and man not working well in harmony together. So we saw in the beginning of the chapter a good example of Moses' parents, I think, working, you know, actively in their faith. They put Moses in a basket, but still obviously trusted the Lord to take care of things. I'm not sure that we don't see Moses here with good intentions, good heart, but kind of like, I kind of see him a little like Peter, you know, kind of isn't patient to allow the Lord to, you know, indicate how to accomplish his goal. He just kind of goes out and accomplishes, does what he thinks would be beneficial, and it ends up being something that's not. It doesn't seem like this was God's plan or desire. It wasn't to be delivered in this way, and so what happens is ultimately 40 more years of, you know, oppression for the Israelites, and I do think, like Tim said, you know, it seems like Moses understands that. He feels guilty. He doesn't look like someone who is, you know, championing the innocent. I think in heart he is, but I think he still feels guilty about that, and this is why he is afraid and he flees there, verse 14.
Another good lesson would be, just because you think no one sees what you're doing doesn't mean no one sees what you're doing.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. 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 We so easily deceive ourselves, don't we? And we know, I mean, intellectually, we understand that God sees everything, but we think that man doesn't, that there are times when man doesn't see or doesn't know, but I suspect that's very infrequently the case. I mean, there are some times, perhaps, that no one else knows or sees, but I think even before our fellow man, there's a lot that we think goes unseen that is actually seen. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I sit in an office building downtown, and I think I'm on the sixth floor. And you look down, my glorious window looks down over the trash can and over the alley, and I see people walking by all the time, and I just think, you know, they have no idea. Like, you know, you think you're walking some innocent corner, and you have no idea that, you know, people are actually seeing you. It's kind of an odd way to make that connection, but it helps me to think, man, I'm always in the presence of other people. I'm certainly always in the presence of God, as Moses was. Sean?
Becky and Chad. All right.
So I wonder if he told that guy, don't tell anybody what happened here.
Right.
You know, and because he was surprised that other people knew. And then we have a witness. It reminds me of Jesus, when Jesus would do a great work for someone, kind of alone, not in the presence of other people, said, don't tell anybody.
Right.
And they did. The word spread fast. Because when you find deliverance, you want to share that. We got somebody on our side.
Right.
And he fought for me. And unfortunately, it didn't work out because maybe it fell away to work out. So I kind of see it that way, too. It's like when we have a great deliverance that we receive, we ought to be just as eager to share that and let other people know that we've been saved, too. And we've got something. You're in the same situation I was in. We've got somebody that can help us.
Yeah, good point. His plan may have gone awry there. Got in the wrong hands. Yeah, good point. So at the end of the day, Moses' efforts as a relative young man at age 40 don't go as he planned it to, at least. I mean, this is really an embarrassment, right? I don't know how you call this something other than a failure. I think, again, Moses' heart was pure, was good, but his efforts ultimately to deliver his people through his own hand, through his own means, this didn't work out. This wasn't going to be effective. And so he's embarrassed. He's put to shame by his own people here. And so he runs away. he runs to this to Midian. I wish I had a map to show you kind of where that was. But Egypt's over here, and you go way over the Sinai Peninsula, way down kind of south of where Israel would ultimately end up being. And that's where Midian is. Seemingly pretty far away. That's not a place. I suppose he felt like that was out of reach of Pharaoh, who was seeking for his own life, or seeking for his life there. And he finds favor there. He proves himself to be a faithful, useful man. He gets married here to Zipporah, has a son named Gershom, and we know later that he will end up spending the next 40 years of his life essentially tending sheep in the land of Midian for this man. Other thoughts and comments through verse 22? All right, so these next three verses are pretty key. If there are three verses you maybe have heard of in the first couple of chapters, it might be these three. Would somebody read 23 through 25? So these are powerful verses. These are encouraging verses. If you feel discouraged, if you feel like God is not taking notice of your oppression, read these verses, and you'll see, wow, God does see. He does notice. We see several words of action. We see that God heard there in verse 24. He remembered there in the middle of 24 his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then God saw in verse 25 the sons of Israel and finally took notice of them. So he hears, he remembers, he sees, and he took notice. That's powerful. There may be plenty of us who see and take notice, are moved with compassion, but have the inability, the resources to change a situation. Moses might have been that kind of example for us. But God, when he takes notice, when he sees, when he's moved with compassion, you have no doubt he has the ability to affect change in the situation, and that's what we're going to see playing out here. One other thought, when we see that in verse 25, God saw the sons of Israel, you may remember back a few months ago in the summer when we were studying Genesis, there were several occasions on which we saw man seeing. I think it started with Adam's wife, what was her name? Eve. Eve saw that fruit that wasn't a good thing. And we saw in chapter 6-ish, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men. That ended up being a bad thing. And there were several other times that happened. When man sees, not always a good thing. In fact, it was consistently a bad thing. I think that happened with Lot. And Abraham, right, God lifted up Abraham's eyes, whereas Lot looks out on his own to move toward Sodom and Gomorrah. And here, when God sees, it's a wonderful thing. It's a great blessing.
It is a great blessing to know that God sees and he knows and he's going to do something. What we have a hard time dealing with is when does he do it? So there's like 40 years more, at least, of them suffering before some action is actually taking place.
Amen. It's been a long, long time, right? I mean, this ends up being 400 years of captivity in Egypt. Wow. Patience is hard.
Born and died in slavery.
Generations, right? Oh. Good point. Yes.
Picture in Revelation in the first chapter, verse 12, where God's standing behind him. We don't see that anymore, but the picture that's there when he calls out to John, he was standing behind John and was looking and seeing the same things John was seeing there. To me, where's this verse just reinforcing the fact that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah, God understands. Well, the deliverance plan begins here in chapter 3. Would somebody read verses 1 through 10?
Now Moses was pastoring the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the left side of the wilderness and came before the mouth of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not come near here. Move your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from the land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Now, behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt.
All right. So here we see God's plan and God's timing. Moses tried it his way initially, and now God's indicating, here's how we're going to accomplish this. Now, clearly, Moses had more time to work out, get a little stronger to take on the enemy. Now he's finally 80. That's usually how that works. 80-year-olds are stronger than 40-year-olds. And God says, you're finally ready. You know, we're ready to send you there in verse 10 down to Egypt. Because not only had he had time to work out, but he also had time to do a lot of really important things. He led a lot of important missions. He had these sheep that he led, a very difficult task. I'm sure he learned a lot through that process. And now God says, now you're ready. You know, now's the time to go. And obviously I'm being a little bit facetious there, but it is remarkable. You know, the way in which God prepares people to lead is not how I would prepare people to lead. We see that with David. You know, David at a young age was a shepherd. We see that with so many of the people that God calls on, it becomes very evident that it is not the person doing the delivering. It is God who's going to do the delivering. And I think if there's anything that becomes clear with Moses as a leader, surely that's going to be the case. We'll see in the following several verses that Moses surely feels like that's the case. Moses no longer feels adequate. At 40, he seemed like he was ready to go. And he was there in Egypt. Now he's far away in Midian. Moses has several excuses, really, what they amount to, but that really indicate he didn't feel prepared. That's just when God can use him. Maybe there's some important lessons in there for us. So he's out here tending the sheep in kind of the other side of the mountain, other side of the world, in the middle of the kind of uninhabited area, it seems. And there's an unexplainable miracle, really, unexplainable situation. There's a bush that's on fire. My first thought was, well, why is that? How did the bush get on fire? That doesn't seem to be what's remarkable. Maybe that was a question. I don't know if that was commonplace for things to burn out in the middle of nowhere, but indeed it is. But what was remarkable about this bush burning? Yeah, it didn't act as other bushes that caught on fire did. So normally a bush burns and then it's consumed and, you know, the fire dies, presumably. And here, the bush just kind of continuously is blazing. And so this catches Moses' attention. He sees this as unusual. There's a point there to be made, I think, when God performs miracles or signs, it's for the purpose of getting people's attention to his message, to his word. It's not just some, you know, unusual sideshow just to impress people. And so Moses draws near to the bush, and God calls Moses in verse 4, Moses, Moses. And Moses has the, I'm going to say the correct response, you know, here I am, you know, I'm ready. We see this as a very similar response that Abraham had in Genesis 22 and verse 1 when God calls him with his son Isaac. We see it's a very similar response to what Samuel will have later in 1 Samuel 3. And there's other examples of that being the case. That's the right response. You know, here I am. We'll see that Moses doesn't exactly, it wasn't quite that simple for Moses because he's going to have some other qualms with what God, what the mission God gives to him. But initially here, he has a very, I think, humble response. And God tells him, look, take off your shoes. You're on holy ground. My presence is here. And look, here's the plan. And he repeats kind of what we already knew as the reader from the end of chapter 2. He kind of repeats here in slightly different terms in verse 7. God says, I've seen the affliction of my people in Egypt. I've given heed to their cry, their taskmasters, for I was aware of their sufferings. And then I think powerfully in verse 8, what does God commit to do? What is he going to do in the beginning of verse 8? I've got it bolded and underlined it in italics in my notes. He's going to deliver. I mean, wow. We've been waiting for this moment. And to your point, it's the Israelites who've been waiting for the time they would be delivered. For generations, for lifetime, they've been desiring to be delivered. They had no idea by what means they would end up being delivered. Even at this point, I think Moses has no real idea how God's going to affect this to happen. And all the way back in Genesis chapter 15, we see that God had promised not only would they be delivered from Egypt, but they would be delivered with all the riches of Egypt to go with them. And you just, I just think as an Israelite, that was just an unfathomable thought. Just to be delivered would be incredible, but to think that you would do it with the riches of Egypt with you is just unfathomable. Tim?
It's impressive that he knows who the God of Abraham is. He grew up in the Egyptian household, and he was educated in the ways of the polytheistic gods, but he knew who this one God was, and he knew perhaps his parents had an influence on him in training. He certainly would have learned about the God of Abraham from the Egyptians.
Certainly not. And, you know, it seems to me, you know, from when he was 40 years old, the chapter prior, it seems like he did understand who he was and what God, you know, the God that he served. And so he seems to have had a relationship with God. We don't read about God speaking to anybody in the Bible for quite some time prior to this, like 400 years-ish time. That doesn't mean God didn't do that. It just means we don't have a record of it at the very least. But I don't suppose this was a common thing. So I think Moses almost would have had to have known who God was prior to this.
The Midianites are also descendants of Abraham as well. So, I mean, I agree. I mean, I believe his parents had a strong influence over his upbringing at the expense of Pharaoh. But continuing these 40 years, he wouldn't have been without the knowledge of Abraham and
right.
The promises. And just because the Midianites weren't Israelites, they still understood who Jehovah God was.
Yeah, fair point.
Jethro was called a priest.
That's right.
I could see a position where, you know, I wouldn't be dogmatic about it, but Moses did not know God prior to going to Midian. He might have known of God, but did not know God. I mean, there's a big difference. You know, the deliverer of God's people doesn't have a relationship with God.
Sure.
I mean, there's a real key there that, you know, he might have known what the prophecy said. He might, but being brought up in the condition that he was brought up in a pagan household, he didn't know God. You know, and it took this 40 years of him being in the wilderness under the tutelage, so to speak, of Jethro, for him to develop this relationship with God as a shepherd before he was ready to lead God's people.
Sure. And ultimately, we don't know. We don't know what he did know, what he didn't know, at what point he did or didn't. But I think it would not be too much of a stretch to see Jethro's at least furthering the understanding of God and had plenty of time through which to do it. Chad.
Thanks, Kyle, but I've also been taken by those issues.
Oh, okay.
When I look at this, I think I cannot but wonder. One, him taking the life of that Egyptian showed something. Here's he had the potential. You know, we see that, and I think maybe God was considered that in all of this as well. But over in the burning bush, I thought it was interesting. An angel of the Lord came, and that fire was the fire in the bush, and caught his attention. And that was. It was interesting to me because it says in there, it says, when he saw it, and now he's finally going to pay attention to the bush, the Lord, it says in there, sees that, but then God speaks from, he's actually speaking, I don't know if it was through that angel, or actually he's, because I don't understand how that all works, or with God himself is actually speaking, either through the angel or God himself speaking to Moses in that particular occasion. But to me, it's just interesting about how this has worked out.
Yeah, very, very different than how God obviously speaks to us today. Remarkable. I think it would be startling for anyone, including Moses. Austin?
Just to keep harping on Acts 7, but Acts 7 is a clear indication that Moses did know that he was a brother, they were children of Israel, and that God had sent him to deliver his people. So, I mean, those words are definitely indications that Moses understood he was an Israelite.
And do we necessarily know at what point he knew that? I mean, by the time he goes, when he's 80, but does it indicate that when he was 40? I guess
yeah,
it does.
23 of Acts 7 says, when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children.
Okay. Yeah, so he certainly became aware. Now, kind of going back to what I think maybe Jared had mentioned, it's hard to know, was that like at 39 and a half, he suddenly learned? You know, a lot of that's kind of speculative. We just don't know. You know, I can, in my mind, conjure up a situation where, you know, there's kind of some covert operation to educate him as to who he is. But one way or the other, he does seem to have understood what he was doing even then to know the Lord. Skip.
Hope you don't mind a geography question.
That's me. I can help.
When you look on a map, if he was in the land of Midian, and he sees in Mount Horeb this burning bush, well, the traditional Mount Horeb is in the Sinai Peninsula, but
right.
The Gulf of Aqaba is between. And so either the traditional place of Mount Horeb is not where it should be. It should be over in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and maybe check me on this, but isn't it true that God promises that at this very mountain,
yep.
That when they came out, that they would worship? As one of the kind of last signs, I think. And so that would seemingly place it appropriately in the Sinai Peninsula, in my mind. You're just saying he's far away from Midian?
When you look on a map, Midian is east of the Gulf of Aqaba.
Right.
Mount Horeb is west.
Yeah, considerably. Yeah.
And for him to see it from Midian would be one question.
Sure.
And then for him to walk there,
sure.
To see about it. It just makes more sense to have Mount Horeb east of Gulf.
Sure. Yeah, good question. I don't know the answer to. In my Bible, I studied the map, it's like, I don't even know what color that is, but light pink that the mountains are described. And I'm colorblind, and so I just chalked it up to, I just can't see this well. But I did notice the same thing. And I had a hard time understanding how far away would Moses likely go with these sheep? I don't know much about sheep, but I wouldn't have thought you traveled more than, I don't know, I mean, in my mind, a dozen miles or something. But maybe they traveled further for some reason. I don't know if he was on some other mission to get new sheep or more sheep or different sheep or whatnot. But good question. Good question. Would not have been an easy place to travel. It's an arid land. So they're taking in, being delivered to, in verse 8, the land flowing with milk and honey. It's a land of plenty. That phrase, a land flowing with milk and honey, will essentially become a proverb in Israel. It's going to be used over and over again, three times in Exodus, once in Numbers, three times in Deuteronomy, and several of the prophets thereafter. God's taking them from bondage to a wonderful place, not just a different place. And so they have much to look forward to. And I don't know what you'd expect Moses' response would be. I'm not sure what your response or mine might be if we were in his shoes. But Moses, instead of getting up and saying, let's get on this, you know, where do we start? He has some reservations. I think that might be an indication of Moses being humble in some ways. I also think it might be an indication of him recognizing how daunting this task is. This was not an easy feat. Moses knows the situation that his people are in. He's been there. He knows the enemy. And maybe that creates a challenge for his faith and for his willingness to go. It wasn't going to be easy to defeat the Egyptians. He tried it once before. It didn't work out so well. But I really think ultimately it's Moses displaying a lack of courage that he should have had, not because he was capable, but because it was God who had chosen to use him. I think a more faithful response would have been, I'm ready to go. God is very patient with Moses. God is patient with lots of folks. You can think of even some of the judges and others that God's patient with. And he is very patient as he works through some of the challenges that Moses presents. I counted as five different objections. You may see a different number, but in verses 11 and 12, it's the who am I objection. He's no longer the kind of the brash leader he was at 40 years old. You know, he felt like he wasn't himself prepared, similar to how David felt before Saul in 1 Samuel 18. Isaiah feels inadequate before God in Isaiah chapter 6 when he falls on his face. So God patiently responds here. Verse 12, he says, I will be with you. Now, that should have been enough. That kind of should just, you know, what else do you really need to know? You know, if God says, I'm going to be with you, that should be enough to kind of clear everything up. And yet it isn't. He objects again in verses 13 through 22. And his question here is, what if they ask what your name is? Which is an interesting question. You know, what if they don't know you or don't understand? What if this name doesn't mean the same thing to them as it does to me? God's response here is a little bit maybe difficult for us to understand, maybe seemingly fairly cryptive. How does God respond to that challenge of Moses? Who does he say he is? Yeah, I am, right? I am. Now, without going too deeply into areas I don't know enough about, I think we have to understand something of the Hebrew language to understand kind of what I am means. So Yahweh, Yod Heh Vav Heh in the Hebrew, is what God's name is. Now, as I understand it, the children of Israel wouldn't have pronounced that, wouldn't have said Yahweh. I think they would have used the word Adonai out of fear for using the name of God directly. But Yahweh it means he is. I mean, it's the third person essentially, whereas I am is the first person of really the same meaning or the same word. And so I think it may be an indication that God's saying, it's not just he is, it's not just, I'm not just the God of the past, I'm not some God that may be distant in the future, I am. I am the God here, presently. I am the God who was then with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the God that will be in the future, but I am. I'm here. I am here now. I realize that may be a lot to think about and to chew on. There's a lot of things we don't know well or understand about that. Thoughts and comments about I am, Jared? Right.
About animals and keeping the flock safe. And so you wonder, that's in his distant past.
Right.
God brings that up again. He's like, how separated is he from that whole situation?
Right.
And it goes again, God's timing isn't our timing.
Amen.
When we think we're prepared, we might not be, and vice versa. So
right. Yeah, no, very good point. Very good point. Okay, well, I think that's probably the end of our time. We'll try and pick up here at the very end of chapter 3 and work through a couple more chapters on Wednesday.